now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, hello, hello. Once again, I'm Ray Shasho. Welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Michael DeBar is a perfect example of how perseverance, hard work, and a positive outlook can achieve many of life's yearnings. Michael is an incredible story. He embraced his passion for the arts and has never looked back. Acting lessons at the Corona Stage School led to a supporting cast member role as Williams, a London East End pupil in the 1967 British drama To Sir With Love, starring Sidney Poitier. Besides acting, Michael loved music, especially American blues and rock and roll. He formed his first band called The Orange Illusion in his teen years. 1972, Michael DeBar became frontman for British glam rockers and cult icon Silverhead. The band eventually signed with Purple Records and released two essential albums, Silverhead 1972 and 16 and Savage in 1973. Silverhead became a significant role model for future generations of glam rock groups. After the premature disbanding of Silverhead, Michael DeBar formed The Detective. The band was signed to Led Zeppelin's Swan Song label by legendary guitarist Jimmy Page in 1975. Detective featured guitarist Michael Monarch from Steppenwolf, Tony Kaye from Yes. The group recorded three studio albums, Detective in 1977, It Takes One and No One in 78, and third album was recorded on Atlantic Records but never released. Michael remains friends with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. During this time, Michael DeBar appeared on the WKRP and Cincinnati television episode Hoodlum Rock as the infamous Sir Charles Dog Weatherby of the band Scum of the Earth. And a Rob Zombie released a song called Scum of the Earth in 2000, and a heavy metal band by the name of Scum of the Earth was formed in 2003. After the breakup of Detective, Michael DeBar teamed up with ex-Sex Pistol guitarist Steve Jones to form Checkered Past. The lineup also included bassist Nigel Harrison and drummer Clem Burke from Blondie and guitarist Tony Sales, formerly of Utopia. DeBar also became the lead singer of the touring and Live Aid version of The Power Station, a Duran Duran spinoff band. Michael DeBar penned the worldwide hit Obsession with Holly Knight, who became a huge hit for the L.A. new wave group Animation in 1985. DeBar states that he loves performing in front of a live audience and rock and roll band, but he's also in love with all the arts and in many shapes and forms. He's also an accomplished actor and probably best known for playing the infamous villain of Murdoch on the popular TV series MacGyver and Alex in the movie Pink Cadillac. In April of 2012, DeBar reunited with Silverhead and all his old mates for his first time in 30 years. The band performed to standing room only audiences in Japan. He's also recently appeared on television series The Finder, Suits, and the motion picture California Solo. Michael has appeared in countless films, television voiceover, and stage roles, and his credits are all inspiring. DeBar has also appeared in Roseanne, Seinfeld, Renegade, Ellen, Nip and Tuck, Heart to Heart, Melrose Place, Nash Bridges, Northern Exposure, Rockford Files, St. Elsewhere, 21 Jump Street, Frasier, Hawaii, Bones, and NCIS, among many others. DeBar's latest release, The Key to the Universe, returned DeBar firing on all cylinders and lighting up the rock world as only he can. Michael is currently the host of Little Steven's Underground Garage on Sirius XM Radio Channel 21. DeBar has heard more than 6 million listeners 5 days a week. He's on 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. Many fans will know him best, of course, as the original MacGyver villain Murdoch, and those fans were in for a treat when DeBar Murdoch returned February 2nd to CBS's MacGyver a reboot alongside the new Murdoch, played by David Deschmalchian, in the much-anticipated Murdoch versus Murdoch episode. Please welcome singer, songwriter, musician, actor, Renaissance man, Michael DeBar to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Michael.
I'm exhausted.
Did you take a nap during all that?
Well, I was looking out of the window.
Your career, it's hard to get it all in, man.
Well, that's what my second wife said. But I, it is quite a litany of gigs, you know, and I'm happy in every one of them. I very rarely go back and look at it all. You know what I mean? I mean, I think for anybody out there that has, really wants to express themselves and be creative, I think it's terribly important to get it done. The discipline required is immense, but rock and roll and acting and the arts is always sort of imbued with this notion that we've got to be stoned and we've got to be chaotic and abandoned and improvisational. And all of that's true. But I think the reason I've been around a long time is because I work really hard. And I'm very disciplined at it. Of course, I spent years behind narcotics. But I was a junkie who actually went for a run in the morning.
Hey, if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it.
So my point being, there's a lot there, but there's a lot to come. You know, I think if you do wallow in all of the victories and defeats of yesterday, it's not healthy, man. You've got to be here, right here, right now. Do what you do right now, the enthusiasm you bring to your shows is exactly what I'm talking about. I'm a very enthusiastic person, and I have a very positive ideal, and I've been through absolutely in the gutter, and I've also been on the on top of the mountain, and both of which I've learned from tremendously. So it's great to be with you.
It's amazing, man. Your career is amazing. Your perseverance is amazing. I guess we can call you, your artistic passions are Muddy Waters and Hamlet. Is that sum it up?
that'd be good. That'd be great. You know, I with a bit of Lord Byron. You know,
Lord Byron.
playing slide guitar, of course. But it's the arts. It's something, you know. Yeah. People say, well, Michael, what do you like best? You know, and I say you. in terms of how you express yourself the most, what is the most satisfying? Well, all of it is satisfying. Being a DJ is incredibly satisfying, and the main reason for that is I'm not playing my music.
Right.
I'm turning people on to music. So therefore, I'm in the passenger seat of their car, God knows, lying in bed with them. Whatever it is, you know, it's an intimate thing. You know, it's you and a microphone, you know.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it. Please listen to my show, you guys. SiriusXM Channel 21, Little Stevens Underground Garage. It really plays rock and soul music that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's an awesome show. It really is. I've heard it. You got some great guests on the show. I love it. It's hard to find good music, good radio anymore, you know. I mean, mainstream radio doesn't have
anything. It's very difficult. It's because of Spotify and people make their own playlists and so on.
Right.
So the age of the idiosyncratic DJ, which is what Stephen Van Zandt is and flies the flag, we are getting more subscribers and more listeners to our shows, and they're in the millions anyway, but it is increasing, whereas radio is dying. You know, because of this caffeinated DJs screaming and yelling about Bieber or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless them. Yeah. You know, nothing wrong with Justin Bieber. But the format is so hysterical that I just want to take a couple of Xanax after I've listened to the fucking radio.
I was fortunate to be a top 40 DJ back in late 70s. You know, when, let's see, New Wave hit, there's still disco around.
Fun.
It was fun. It was a fun time. There's still good music on. Zeppelin still had some songs on the radio. The Cars were big. Donna Summer. So it was
but
a fun
But we don't
that was
care,
fun time.
You know. It's, the thing is if you hear Muddy Waters and then you hear the Stones, hear Ronnie Spector, and then you had Dion, and then you had Sam Cooke, Otis, the Beatles. You know, good rock and roll music, great soul music, which I adore, the Temptations.
So do I.
You know, so Motown is, I mean, if you ever throw a party, don't play anything but Motown. This would be my great takeaway from this interview to your listeners. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a barbecue or a party, you've got to play Motown. Because, you know, who wouldn't dance to Dancing in the Streets?
Yeah, exactly.
So we play a wide variety of music, and my life has been a wide variety show.
It has. You know what I love about your voice? Your voice is always different on many tracks, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the same, you know? You never get tired of listening to you, because it's always different. You got a great voice, man. Awesome voice.
Oh, thanks, Alice has been playing my new single. I got a new single out called Living in the USA, and the other side is Bob Dylan's You Gotta Serve Somebody.
Which is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you, and people have really been enjoying it. And Alice, who I've known for, you know, decades, because Miss Pamela, my ex-wife, who wrote on with the band, of course, was on Zappa's label with Alice. And so we've all remained incestuously friends. And he said, Mike, you should be on Broadway. This is the final thing you should do, a musical, which I would love to do, but I don't have the time to give to that discipline of every night, matinees and eight shows a week. I've got too much. You know, I'm joining MacGyver again. I'm, you know, my radio show and touring and making my own stuff, which is so important to me, to make my own stuff and not be beholden to some corporate structure.
I want to say you got a new band out, right? You got Clem Burke on drums.
Yeah.
It's a great band. What's going to happen with the band? Are you guys going to tour a little bit or make an album?
Yeah, I'll do some gigs time allowing, you know. But the real crux of my answer to your question is I want to put out as much music. I have so much music recorded, you know, so many songs I have in the can that are really, especially with this crew, who are like MC5 Stooges, very powerful, because nobody has got the balls, it seems. I mean, maybe they're not necessary. Maybe there is no rock and roll. I could care less either way. All I care about is what I like and what I love, what I like to do. So I do what I do, and everybody else can do what they want to do. There's not a competition. So I'll do some gigs, and, you know, Clem wants to play and does play every night with someone, you know, and I feel the same way. I'll go and sing on somebody's record. I'll go jump up on stage, whatever. It's like blood. It's, you know, it's the heart, as Pamela says in her books, the heart of rock and roll beats below your waist.
Oh, wow. That's great. Great quote. I'd love to have her on the show. Just tell her she's got an open invitation to come on the show.
I shall. I'm sure she'd be delighted.
Yeah. You've got you did a few songs talking about Motown. You did Eve of Destruction, Ball of Confusion, and then you dedicated a song, Welcome to the Revolution. I think you dedicated that to Emma Gonzalez from the Parkland High School.
That is correct.
They
are. If you're looking for rock stars, there they are.
Yeah.
And David Hull and all of those people, Welcome to the Revolution is a song that I wrote, you know, and it's because of one of the placards that one of the beautiful young people was waving in the air when all of the shit went down. And I'm so moved by their leadership that, you know, we wrote a song, we recorded it immediately, and I'll put it out when Serve Somebody has run its cycle.
Yeah, so you know, the gun debate is ridiculous. You know,
well, of course it is. Yes,
there's so many people. No matter what happens, how many people get killed? I gotta have my weapons. I gotta stock my weapons. You know,
what is that? But that's irrelevant. What's relevant is the NRA. The NRA are giving money to politicians. Politicians make the laws. The laws will not be changed unless the NRA. They tell the NRA to fuck off because it's not about people saying, I want to hold my gun in a cold hand in Charlton Heston. That's nothing to do with it. The argument is that they are in the hands of a corporate structure. It could be Diet Pepsi. It doesn't matter. These
right.
people are giving the money to get them in at Congress, the Senate, etc. The presidency is bought, and it's bought by a corporate structure giving the money to the people that need enormous amounts of money to go and have a campaign to be voted in. So I'm very passionate about this because I love this country. I've lived here since 1972, mm-hmm. probably before you were born, you know. So it's important to me that that those youngins are there saying their piece. It's a long, hard struggle. But I don't think anybody would argue with the fact that let's get guns under control.
Oh, definitely. You know? No, I'm with you 100% on that. Yeah, there's no need for having assault weapons, you know. I don't think they should manufacture assault
weapons. It is beyond comprehension.
Right.
That these weapons are allowed to be in the hands of anyone, you know, except people who are fighting for the safety and security of this country.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible. It really is. You know, you're kind of a cult figure because of, you know, of course, Murdoch on MacGyver and also Silverhead. Mm-hmm. You made a quote in our last interview. You said, with Silverhead, we were always the band that was trying to seduce the audience. We were touring with Uriah Heep, Deep Purple, etc., always trying to win the audience over. Skinny little bastards with makeup on in Mobile, Alabama in 1972. We were a target for the boys and a different kind of target for the girls. We had a big bullseye on our ass. I love that.
Yeah.
You're very clever, you know that?
Yeah, well, dig it. You know, in those days, we were targets. You know, the thing is, when we came here in 1972, there was a them and an us. It was a very definite them and us. There is no such thing anymore.
Right.
So when you get an androgynous kid in the parking lot of the club that he's just played in, dripping in sweat, wearing leopard skin pants, those crew-cut Eisenhower quarterbacks are going to be uncomfortable. The girls, because of the way we look, it's like it's sort of homoerotica. It's difficult for them to accept at 18, 19, 20 years old. They don't know who they are yet, and we didn't either. But we were determined to have fun and provoke people, and the girls wanted danger. They wanted danger from somebody that they look like. You see that? So therefore, the big burly dudes that were, you know, great. I mean, 90% of them we became friendly with, and we'd get them stoned and everything, and we'd be cool. But every now and then you'd get a gorilla on your back, you know, and it's all very well to have a bullseye on your ass, but having a gorilla on your back is a lot more dangerous.
Oh, yeah. So Silverhead was such a great band. So was Detective. Mm. You know, the 16 and Savage, if you're, you know, a rock aficionado, you always remember that album cover. I always remember that at the record store.
Yeah, it was a very amazing album, and, you know, but the record company, you know, the usual story went belly up, and we were all coked out, and, but I have no regrets, because I know that we made a couple of really cool records, and that's
yes,
all.
You did.
And I'm, you know, I love those guys, you know, and always will.
Yeah. What happened to the third album? The third album you were making?
You know, dude, drug addiction is is a terrible thing. And, you know, we'd been touring pretty much every night for about 2.5 years, supporting everybody.
Yep.
And then going to do the club late at night, you know, of that particular town, whether it was Atlanta or Nashville or Kansas City or Chicago, wherever, we play the clubs to our fans, you know. So exhausted, absolutely burnt to a crisp, and some of us more than others. And, you know, it just couldn't go on like that. So we took a break, and the break turned into the end. It's a long story, which I wouldn't, you know, lay on you guys right now, but it's a very predictable one, too. But we had the explosion, and there was an aftermath of that explosion that blew us away and apart.
What happened to the third album? Was it Brutiful that you were going to make?
It was called Brutiful, or the play on the word beautiful, because, rock and roll should be brutal. And it should be beautiful. And I just put the words together, man, you know, and it just seemed to make sense. And we had a few songs. which came out on the reissues last year, which Cherry Red Group put out, which is on iTunes and Amazon and totally available, of tracks you've never heard and live stuff and amazing songs I don't even remember recording are on those CDs. But we wrote one, James Dean and Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. You know, we wrote tributes and homages to those two. We were obsessed with America, and we wanted to capture it from our point of view, hence the title 16 and Savage, which is basically the age of people. You know, the youngins that came to see us were very, very young, and as were we. You know, we were only 20. And yeah. It was, of course, when it was reissued, there was a lot of controversy. Mm-hmm. Given definitely. The hashtag MeToo movement. So we got a lot of groups in England saying, this is disgraceful, this cover, which was of a young girl looking in the mirror with her blouse torn, and mm-hmm. it was called 16 and Savage. And I can see why. I don't want to send out a message of savaging people. It was a metaphor, and it was sure. art, and it was yep. rock and roll. And one had many a debate with people who had a problem with it. And that's their right. Yep. But it's also our right to express ourselves as artists.
Sure. Two of my favorite songs, from one from Silverhead, In Your Eyes. Wow, what a song that was, man. And
thank you
with
so
much.
Detective, I appreciate that.
That was a great song. Detective, One More Heartache. And,
yeah,
Recognition.
Hard.
Recognition was another
yeah,
incredible
yeah.
tune.
Well, that's what everybody wants, isn't it? You know? And they end up with a heartache. Actually,
yeah.
I was thinking of getting Detective back together all these decades later and putting out a version of One More Heartache, but this time we'll call it One More Heart Attack.
One More Heart Attack. It's funny.
Mushrooms would be pretty catchy.
I want to congratulate you on your Murdoch character coming back. I saw the episode. I was disappointed they killed you off. Are you completely killed off, or are you going to come back from the dead?
My dear friend, have you ever seen Murdoch die?
No, you're right.
That's all I can say about that. The rest is CBS.
Cool, awesome, awesome. That was a good show, by the way. And
yeah, I love yeah. David, you know, David S. Marsh, and we've become very close, and I love him. In fact, after we wrapped that episode, we went to see to the screening of it when it was edited in Los Angeles, and I had a skull ring. I had my own skull ring, but I had another one, and mm-hmm. I brought it with me to the screening of that episode, and at the end of it, I gave it to him.
Oh, really?
The other Murdoch.
David?
And, yeah, David Destmalchian, who is absolutely amazing actor and
yeah,
is destined for greatness. There's no question about that. But giving him the ring and then, you know, having my ring on and then we shook hands, it was one of the great moments, you know, in my life, because it was humanity. It's not stardom. It's nothing to do with any of that. It's two actors playing the same guy.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty heavy, man, you know, you think about it.
Yeah.
And I was so moved by his performance and delighted to add, you know, whatever I got to that show.
Well, did you have to prepare at all for the reemergence of your character? Or you? It
good
came?
God, no. I'd never prepared for anything in my life. I just get up and do it, goddammit.
That's why you're so successful, I guess.
Well, I just get up and do it. What it. You know, give me the lines, you know, give me a great wardrobe, and let's go.
Yeah. Man, you could be a scary dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've all got everything in us. It's just being able to access it. That's all acting is. You know, I mean, that's why children are such good actors, because they can play and believe
true.
It, you know, and... But I'm from the Spencer Tracy school, you know your lines and don't bump into the furniture, is what he said. And I'm from that. I'm not Daniel Day-Lewis going and becoming a cobbler, you know, or making women's dresses or whatever. And he's a genius, I mean, but I am not Daniel Day-Lewis, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're a tremendous actor, by the way. You're very, very good at that, too.
Thank you. I get lost when they say action, and I come back when they say cut.
Yeah. You know, you and a buddy of mine, Joe Lala, were the only ones that were in Seinfeld episodes that were rock stars. Joe was in Blue's Image, Stephen Stills in Manassas, and he was in the Faith Peter episode. Yeah,
I know. Big fan. Big fan.
Joe was a friend of mine, and you know, he passed away a few years now, I guess.
God bless him. Yeah, yeah. Well, I ain't passing away for another 100 years like your dad.
That's right, man. But you were in the Smelly Car episode, and Chuck Negron's cousin, Taylor Negron, was also in that episode, too. That's a little trivia for people
out
there.
Chuck. I befriended Chuck. I was very good friends with Danny Hutton years ago. Mm-hmm. Years. Decades. 72, 73, maybe. Danny Hutton, oh, man. Those boys, Three Dog Night, woo, they howled all night, let me tell you.
Yeah. I had Chuck on the show recently, you know, and of course he went through hell.
He did.
With the drug.
You know, and we put ourselves through hell. You know, hell isn't something that is bestowed upon us. If we open the door to hell, you better be prepared for what it has for you. And it's your choice. And at a certain point, it's beyond your choice. You're trapped.
Yeah. You're also a philosopher,
that life,
too.
Yeah. He got out of it, though.
Yeah, he did. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing what he went through and came out of it. It is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. He's great.
The Key to the Universe. I loved it, by the way. Five stars for that one. You know, Carnaby Street, I was your first review for that. And
really? That's fantastic.
Yeah, I was your first
review.
We
literally went in the garage. Yeah, that's great.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that album, but The Key to the Universe is also an incredible album.
Yeah, it's good. You know, I don't know. You know, I mean, I'll go in there and a bunch of songs and cut them and have fun and go to dinner and do it again. You know, next day. You know, I don't
Everything
know.
Comes so easy
I don't
to
know
you.
If it's good. I don't know if it's good or bad. It seems irrelevant to me at this stage of the game, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, that's good. Everybody's going to love that. I don't go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sit in the control room and break out the champagne after somebody's solo. You know what I mean?
It'll
either get me off or it won't. You know, and if everybody feels good about it, put it out. I don't know if it's, you know, groundbreakingly spectacular. I've kind of got away from judging what everyone does, you know, and just enjoying it. And I really, really want to bring that home to people that's listening, that are young musicians, men and women and brothers and sisters out there making music. Enjoy yourself. My advice to you is don't listen to anybody's advice.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Just have fun and be true to yourself and write about something that really happened.
Well, it's definitely a fun album. Some of the songs I really loved, Maybe Means Nothing was a favorite.
I wrote that with Steve Stevens.
Oh, really?
Billy Idol's guitar player is a genius, you know, in anybody's book. But what was the other one you liked?
I like Burning in Water, Drowning in Flames. You sounded a little bit like Eric Burdon, and then I heard like maybe a little Bad Company in there. I don't know. It was another favorite of mine.
Yeah, that's a great description. That is a blues song I did not write, but I thought was such a great lyric, and I wanted to do a bluesy song on that album, you know. Because at the end of the day, what is more Muddy Waters than Hamlet, you know, as you were referring to earlier. I think the blues is the basis for everything I've ever done.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You did a blues tune I wanted to way back when. I can't remember which album it was on. But it was fantastic. I got to go back and look for it.
Hoochie Coochie Man, maybe? I don't know. But there are some absolute classics, but you got to be careful when put it to record or put it on vinyl because they've been done so often. You know, that's why doing Dylan's You Gotta Save Somebody was a real plunge into the deep end, you know, because... You'd kind of better or even equalize Bob Dylan. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you have to do it in a completely new and unique way for anybody to take it seriously.
Yeah, God bless Dylan. People. You know, I love his songwriting, but I was never a fan of his singing. So anybody that with a great voice doing Dylan, I'm going to definitely love. I hate to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because those melodies are so amazing. I mean, he's he's just won the Nobel Prize, for God's sake. You know, he's a brilliant poet and a cultural icon. And I happen to adore his voice, you know, because I think it's rough and it's not the typical beautiful, you know. If ever I did an opera, I would call myself Luciano Pavarotti. I would be a punk opera star, dude.
That'd be different. That would be different.
Luciano. Yeah, you know. I mean, what I'm trying to say is any style, all it's got to have is truth and excitement and energy.
Right.
That's I don't care how you know, what you sound like. I don't care if you're out of tune. If you've got a vibe and there's energy there, people love it. People want to feel something. They don't want to analyze something. They want to feel it. You don't dance with a you know, professor of science unless he's a really good dancer.
True.
Or she.
The other song I loved was Supernatural Lovers. It reminded me a little bit of a melody of Ian Dury, you know, from the Blockhead.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I loved him.
Yeah.
Boy, that was
so
subliminal, if that's what you're hearing. I wrote that, but it's I love that. It's just almost like a Ian Dury goes disco kind of. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, but I loved him. He was such an incredible Dickensian character.
Yeah, I liked Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. Remember that one?
Brilliant. Absolutely staggeringly cool.
Yeah, he was cool. Yeah. I saw you on YouTube doing all the young dudes, man. That was awesome. I love when you do David Bowie stuff.
It was his birthday. And his birthday, and, you know, I've known him, God rest his soul, and he's David Bowie. It's indescribable. I mean, I get a tear in my eye whenever I speak of him, you know. And my girl adores him, too. And we both, you know, I met him several times, man.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing. And it was just a tribute. And I tried to give it everything I'd got, you know. It's a very emotional.
I love to hear you
it's
do
on
Heroes.
YouTube, yeah. All the young dudes. What?
I like to hear you do Heroes.
Yeah, it's. I've stayed away from all of that because there's these bands and musicians that play to them going around the world, you know, doing these songs with different singers, and that's a beautiful thing, but it's not something that I would ever do.
Mm-hmm. You like to do your own?
You know, if I want to hear Moon Age Daydream, I'm going to listen to David Bowie singing Moon Age Daydream.
Yeah. How's your buddy Jimmy Page and Robert Plant? I know Robert Plant's doing well. How's Jimmy doing lately?
Well, you know, he's just devoted to his legacy. And therefore, all of these incredible remixes and stuff of Led Zeppelin are amazing, and that's what he spends time on. But he's been getting, you know, he's been getting out more because he, you know, so many people, I think, realize, you know, they're in their 70s and they really want to let people know what was behind Stairway to Heaven and how that came about and his love of that band, you know, because you always get this sort of the usual, you know, combat between the singer and the guitar player, whether it be Steve Tyler, Joe Perry, Noel and Liam, whoever it is, John and Paul. You know, he wants to put that aside and just concentrate on the music. So he's been now he's done this incredible Yardbirds project where he's found the best stuff of Yardbirds.
Awesome.
You know, and I don't know if he'll go out and play music. He's a very private man.
Yeah. Man, I can imagine Jimmy Page and you together in a new band. Wow.
It'd be hot.
Wow.
It would be hot, yeah. It would be very
hot. That would be awesome. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Well, you know, stranger things have happened. All I can say is one word, Murdoch.
We need more Murdoch. Old Murdoch.
Led Murdoch. Yeah.
Led Murdoch. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
I had Alana Miles on the show recently. You know, she sang Black Velvet, and she was Robert Plant's ex-girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's had a few of them.
Yes, he has. Michael, here's a question I ask everyone that I interview.
Okay.
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? I get some interesting answers from this.
I would be Rudolph Valentino's love interest.
Really? Wow, I never heard that one before.
I'm sure you haven't, and you won't ever again. And I answer sort of, in that way, because I don't give a fuck about anything like that. I don't.
Right.
There's nothing there that I would want to insert myself into, although that's a sort of a double entendre. There,
yeah.
But I things exist, and you either create it and do it yourself, or you enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
I don't have a Field of Dreams.
Hmm.
I live
you've
in
already
the
lived
field.
It. Yeah,
I
you've
have
already
a house
lived it.
Built
yeah.
on that field.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't wish for anything. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could have been in the Stones, man. I would have just played, kazoo with the Rolling Young Great. Okay, just go do it, man. I don't need to do anything like that. I'm happy with what I'm doing.
Yeah. Do you have children or grandkids that are in the music?
Lady Gaga is my daughter. Not many people know that. And she's Lady Gaga de Baba. And she's just a great girl. I'm very proud of her.
You're joking, of course.
It's up to you, man. I have a son who's brilliant, speaks Japanese, lives in Japan. He translates, from the Japanese to English at video games. He creates games. I'm very proud of him.
Oh, cool.
So, no, I have no grandchildren. And my only son I'm so proud of his achievements because the video game business, as you may or may not know, makes the movie business look like a yard sale. And he is tremendously successful in that area. And I have great pride in whatever he does or whatever he would have chosen. I don't believe in the lineage of he's carrying on the family tradition. That's nonsense.
Mm-hmm. He's been in Japan for a while. I think I remember, last time we talked, I think he was in Japan.
Yeah, he's back and forth.
Yeah.
But he's he's working on a new game now, which is going to take years. These games take years to make. And he's deeply, deeply involved in that and very hard to get hold of right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I love him. Spammer, we're so lucky to have had him.
Yeah.
And each other.
How old is he?
Yeah. He's 69.
Oh, he's 69?
Yeah.
Really?
No, you idiot.
Well, you told me you were like 100 and something, so.
105.
105, right?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. He's 38.
He's 30, okay. All right. Yeah, you can do some stand-up comedy, too. You know that?
Dude, I can do it lying down if you like.
I think you can.
I'm
last question, Michael.
How
do you keep so fit, man?
I don't eat very much. What I do eat, I'm very precious about. I stay away from sugar and bread.
Oh, good. Yep.
And I drink lots of water, and I go to the gym every day. As soon as I hang up with you, I'll go to the gym and do some cardio, and then I'll come back and record one of my radio programs. And, and after that, I go and talk to CBS about a series that they're considering me for. And then in the evening, I have a meeting with a director, brilliant guy, I want to do a series about sex, and it's called The Last Taboo. And what it's about is keeping passion alive in a relationship, and how hard that is, if you pardon the pun. And it's very it's a great idea. And I want to interview people, all sorts of people with all sorts of genders, and LGBT community, older couples, young couples, whatever it is, man.
Right.
I want to know
whatever
what
love is
and why it's dying. Why is passion dying? Why? What are people passionate about today?
Mm-hmm.
So I got a big meeting tonight about that, and tomorrow is another day.
Yeah, there's a big difference between passion and just having sex, it's...
Well, yes, it is, and that's why the great irony of the American sexual culture is that pornography is its biggest economic driven corporation, pornography.
Right.
And yet,
right.
and yet sex in America is absolutely hidden. You know, but it's coming out now. Because people are being so brave about their sexualities, it's coming out now, but it's still hidden. You know, it still has that Catholicism, that sort of Christian ethic of morality, that sex should be enjoyed and kept alive by honesty and truth and looking them in the eyes, looking the partner in your eyes. And I think the sexiest thing ever is respect.
Mm-hmm.
If you respect somebody, it's horny. If you respect somebody, you know, it then develops into a physical exchange. But we'll
find out.
What
I'm worried about is my son is just turned 30. My daughter is 32. They're both married, have kids. I got grandchildren, whatever. But I've noticed the younger generations, they don't have the romance. They don't. I never see them holding hands or kissing and, you know, being very passionate with each
other. That's a brilliant and very observant view. That's exactly why I'm doing it, what you just said.
Yep.
There's no holding hands. There's no holding hands. You know why? You know why there's no holding hands? Because they're holding a fucking phone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
They'd rather capture a moment than experience it. They'd rather have a selfie than an orgasm.
Rather have a selfie than an orgasm. That's good. Pretty soon, the selfie is going to give you an orgasm. The phone.
Well, maybe in the 70s, you know, but not for me anymore. But dude, it's great to speak with you. I have to run. I've got
no problem
stuff, and I know you have. But it's so great to talk to you. I love.
Oh man, I love talking to you. You're a genius.
Thank you.
You really are.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and more importantly, for all the great rock and roll music and incredible acting roles you continue to bring to us all.
Well,
thank you so much,
Mike. Keep them coming, man, and my love to your listeners and everybody that needs it.
Thank you, Michael. We love you, man.
God bless.
God bless. Take care. Tune in to Michael DeBar as the host of Little Steven's Underground Garage on Sirius XM Radio Channel 21, heard by more than 6 million listeners, 5 days a week, 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. For more information about Michael DeBar, visit www.michaeldebar.com or on Facebook, www.facebook.com/MDESBar. And on Twitter, www.twitter.com/MDESBARRES. Also, purchase the latest album by Michael DeBar entitled The Key to the Universe at Amazon.com. Very special thanks to Kitty Page for arranging this interview with Michael DeBar, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of VBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at the Ray Shasho Show at gmail.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to Be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.